Hi, Rebecca Shear here, inviting you to join the Circle Round Club. You can get ad-free episodes, bonus bedtime stories, and first dibs on tickets to Circle Round events, plus exclusive access to our club store, where you can get special extras, like a personalized birthday message from me. Join today at wbur.org/CircleRoundClub.
Produced by the iLab at WBUR, Boston.
Hi! I hope you've buckled your seatbelt because you are in for one spectacular ride. What you're about to hear is a road trip-worthy episode we're calling Casting a Spell, featuring 90 minutes of your favorite Circle Round stories about magic. All right, start your engines. Let's go! Think about something you own that you truly value. It needn't be fancy or sparkly or shiny. It could be as plain as an old teddy bear or a favorite book. Sometimes the things we cherish most are the simplest things. In today's story, a father gives his three sons some seemingly simple heirlooms, but the magic they contain inside leads to one wild adventure. I'm Rebecca Shear, and welcome to Circle Round, where story time happens all the time. Today, our story is called The Hat, The Horn, and The Purse. Versions of this tale come from Italy, and people have been telling it for years and years and years. Some really great folks came together to bring you this tale, including Bobby Moynihan. The Saturday Night Live alum stars in the new reboot of the 1980s animated series DuckTales. So, circle around, everyone, for The Hat, The Horn, and The Purse. Giovanni was the proud father of three sons. As they grew up, he did all he could to teach them to be honest, hardworking, and generous. When the brothers were old enough to set out on their own, Giovanni decided to send each of them off with a special gift. He called them over to his easy chair by the fire and placed his hand on the shoulder of his oldest son, Lorenzo.
Lorenzo, the gift I offer you today is this hat.
Lorenzo took the hat from his father's weathered hands. He noticed the hat was threadbare, tattered, and full of holes.
Oh, thank you, Father. I will treasure this hat forever.
You're such a considerate boy. But listen, this is not just a tattered old hat. There's magic in it. Put it on your head and you become invisible. Go anywhere you want, and as long as you're wearing this hat, no one will see you.
Lorenzo put the hat on his head, and just like that, he disappeared. Moments later, he reappeared, clutching the hat in his hands.
It's true! The hat made me invisible. Now you see me? Now you don't!
Giovanni smiled. Then he turned to his second son, Matteo.
Matteo, I present you with this horn.
The horn was dented and tarnished, but Matteo was grateful nevertheless.
Oh, thank you, Father. I've always wanted to play an instrument.
That's good to hear, but listen, this instrument isn't fit for making music. However, if you blow this horn and make a wish, whatever you wish for will be yours.
Matteo brought the horn to his lips and blew. Seconds later, a platter appeared on the table. It was piled high with pasta.
Wow! That's amazing! I was just thinking about how hungry I was.
Again, Giovanni smiled. Then he turned his gaze to his youngest son, Luca.
Luca, my gift to you is this coin purse.
Luca looked at the shabby purse. It was covered with stains and its zipper was broken. Still, he was grateful.
Oh, thank you, Father. I will work hard to fill this purse with savings.
I know you'll work hard, my son. This purse will ensure that you never go hungry. Every time you put your finger inside, you will find a silver coin. Just Reach inside and you'll have the money you need.
Luca poked one finger inside the purse, and sure enough, he found a silver coin. Then another, and another.
Oh my goodness! Thank you, Papa!
Giovanni smiled at each of his sons and asked them to put their hands in his.
Lorenzo, Matteo, Luca. You three are brothers, and you always will be. Though I've given each of you a particular gift, I want you to share these gifts with one another whenever you can.
Of course, Papa.
You know we will.
We promise.
After hugs and kisses all around, the three brothers stepped outside and went their separate ways. Lorenzo was setting out to be an artist. Matteo dreamt of becoming a doctor. And the youngest brother, Luca? Well, he wasn't yet sure. But one thing Luca was sure of was how much he loved telling stories. At lunch one afternoon, Luca was sitting in a cafe, telling his waiter the story of the coin purse.
Then I stuck one finger inside.
Luca felt a tap on his shoulder. Looking up, he saw the man in charge of guarding the grand mansion at the edge of the city.
And another?
Luca!
Oh, hi! Sorry, sir, I was so busy telling my story that...
I know. We've all heard your story by now, including the Duchess.
The Duchess was the owner of the grand mansion. Rumor had it she owned more ornate furniture and priceless art than a queen. Some people said her dining room had enough golden plates and silver spoons to feed an army. But everyone in the city knew the Duchess was a greedy woman and a stingy one. Even though she had space to host hundreds of guests, she hadn't invited anyone over in years. So you can imagine Luca's surprise when the guard said this.
Luca, the Duchess would like you to come for tea.
For tea? Me? Really?
Really? She'd like you to come over. Now. And between you and me, you know how demanding she is. So I wouldn't waste any time.
Luca jumped up, smoothed his hair, and tucked in his shirt. He put his hand in his pocket to feel for his magic coin purse, then followed the guard to the Duchess's mansion. Inside the living room, Luca marveled at the cushy red velvet sofas and the lacy curtains. When the Duchess breezed into the room, she looked Luca up and down.
Definitely not what I was expecting.
Excuse me?
Well, I heard my guard telling my cook and butler all about your special purse, the one that produces coin after coin after coin. I guess I expected you to be fancier. There's no way that purse of yours could actually work.
But it does work. It really does. It amazes me every time I use it.
The Duchess snapped her fingers, and the butler brought in a silver tray. On it was a deck of playing cards. The Duchess snatched up the cards before shooing the butler away.
You scram!
The Duchess looked at Luca and fanned out the deck of cards in her hands.
Tell me, Luca, are you a betting man?
Luca was sheepish in his reply.
Well, no, Duchess. My father taught me that gambling is...
Oh, just sit down. We're going to play some cards.
The Duchess insisted they play for money. She kept raising the stakes higher and higher. And every time she did, Luca used his purse to produce more and more silver coins.
So, it really does work, this coin purse of yours. I can hardly believe it. May I take a look?
Of course, Duchess. Here, just be gentle with it. It's from my papa, you know, so it's really rather special.
But before Luca could utter another word, the Duchess grabbed the coin purse right out of his hand.
The coin purse! It is mine! Guard, escort this man from the house at once.
Next thing Luca knew, the Duchess's guard was leading him outside toward the tall stone wall that surrounded the mansion.
Sorry, little man. If I had my way, you'd get to stay. But what the Duchess says goes.
Once the big iron gate clanked shut behind Luca, he slumped down onto the street, his head in his hands.
What have I done? Papa trusted me with this coin purse, and now it's gone. I must get it back from the Duchess. But how?
What would you do if you were Luca? How would you get the purse back from the Duchess? We'll find out what happens after a quick break.
My favorite stories are Ashes for Sale.
I like the story of the Golden Lamb because it taught me to use my talents.
My favorite music is The Lion, The Whisker, because I think the music is really beautiful.
Welcome back to Circle Round. I'm Rebecca Shear. Today, our story is called The Hat, The Horn, and The Purse. When we left off, Luca was wondering how he'd get his magical coin purse back from the greedy Duchess. As he sat with his head in his hands, he suddenly had an idea.
My brothers! Lorenzo and Matteo, of course!
Luca made his way to the home of his brother Lorenzo, who was working as an artist. It was sunset, and Lorenzo was standing at his easel, working hard to capture the blazing reds, yellows, and pinks of the western sky.
Ciao, Lorenzo!
Luca, how are you?
Actually, you know the hat Papa gave you? The one that makes you instantly disappear? I need to borrow it. I'm in trouble.
Trouble? Oh no! What happened, Luca?
It's nothing, really. I made a mistake and I need to fix it. I promise you, you'll get your hat back.
Promise?
Promise.
Well, Father did always teach us to share, so here it is. Good luck, Luca!
With Lorenzo's hat in his hand, Luca sprinted back to the big wall surrounding the Duchess's mansion. He slipped on the hat and immediately became invisible to the human eye. He climbed over the wall and leapt into the garden. It was dark outside, but the air was warm, and one of the Duchess's windows was wide open. Luca dove through the window and found himself in the Duchess's dining room. And there was the Duchess, eating a bowl of soup at her long table.
Cook! This soup is too salty and too cold. Ugh. Could it be any harder to find good help these days?
The Duchess was dining all alone, but not for long.
Oh, she's gonna love this!
Still invisible, Luca lunged toward the table and grabbed the Duchess's bowl of soup. He lifted it to his lips and drank it all down in one big slurp.
What is going on here? How is my soup disappearing?
The Duchess dropped her spoon with a clatter as Luca began to speak.
Duchess, it is I, Luca, your favorite card-playing partner. I figured I had every right to take your soup. After all, you took my coin purse.
Luca thought the Duchess would immediately apologize. Instead, she laughed.
Oh, you silly young man. You bragged about that coin purse to everyone in town. Of course it was bound to be taken. Listen, I'm happy to give it back, but how can I be sure it's really you? I can't even see you.
Without missing a beat, Luca pulled off the hat.
Now you see me, and now you will give me my coin purse.
I do see you. And I will give you your purse, but first, tell me, how did you do that remarkable trick?
My father gave each one of us brothers a special gift, and my oldest brother...
Remember, Luca couldn't resist sharing a good story, so he began telling the Duchess all about his brother's magic hat.
You're instantly invisible.
Amazing! I must see it for myself.
Before Luca knew what was happening, the Duchess had seized the hat, pulled it over her head, and become invisible.
Now that coin purse and the hat are mine. Guard, take this young man away at once.
So, once again, the guard escorted Luca past the big iron gate.
I'm sorry to do this to you, little man. Don't tell the Duchess, but I like you. Still, a job's a job.
As the guard went back to the mansion, Luca fought to hold back tears.
Oh, this is unbelievable. First I lose my coin purse to the Duchess, and now Lorenzo's hat? This is no good. There must be a solution. Think, Luca, think.
So he did. And suddenly...
Aha!
He knew what he would do. By this time, it was very late, but Luca suspected his brother Matteo would be wide awake at the university library, where he was studying for his medical school exams. Luca dashed to the university and scurried over to the desk where Matteo was hunched over his books.
Matteo! Hey! Hey, Matteo! Luca, what are you doing here? It's so late at night.
I need your help, Matteo. Can you lend me the horn Papa gave you? Just for one night, and then I'll bring it right back.
I'm happy to help, little brother. Here, take it. And be careful.
Luca gripped the rusty horn in his hand and rushed back to the Duchess's mansion.
Okay, now that I'm here, maybe a few elephants would get her attention.
Luca brought the horn to his lips and blew out one long note. Suddenly, a herd of massive gray elephants appeared, just as he'd wished.
Listen, my friends, I need you to make some noise. A lot of noise.
The elephants lifted their trunks and began to trumpet loudly. By now, it was the middle of the night, so the noise instantly jolted the Duchess from her slumber. She sprung from her plush feather bed and scampered to the window.
What is going on out there?
Luca smiled. He patted one of the elephants on its side.
Oh, it's just me and my friends. Give us the coin purse and the hat, or we'll charge ahead and knock down your house.
Knock down my house? My big, beautiful house? There's no need. Come inside, and I'll give you what you ask.
Luca marched proudly through the front door. The Duchess was waiting for him downstairs.
Luca, you've done it again. I am absolutely astounded, astonished, overwhelmed. Tell me, however did you summon those elephants to my house?
My father gave my brother this trusty horn. It may look...
Well, as we now know so well, Luca was always up for telling a tale. So he began regaling the Duchess with the story of the horn.
Horses, hats.
Okay. I know what you want. But first, I have to try this horn myself.
Luca was about to protest, but it had been a long day and he was tuckered out. Before he knew what was happening, the Duchess had yanked the horn from his hands. She brought it to her lips and ordered 25 monkeys to escort Luca out of the house.
Go ahead, monkeys. Take him away. Go.
Chattering and grunting, the monkeys lifted Luca up, carried him outside, and dropped him in the Duchess's massive garden, in a far-off corner that was overgrown and tangled with weeds. Hopelessly worn out, Luca fell asleep. When he woke the next morning, he was ravenous. Luca glanced around the weedy, forgotten corner of the Duchess's garden and noticed a tiny tree growing amidst the brambles.
Mmm, figs!
Luca bolted toward the tree and gobbled up fig after fig. But before he knew it, he felt a tickling sensation in his nose.
What? Oh, what is... Oh, my gosh!
You see, the more figs Luca gobbled up, the longer his nose became. It was now long as a trombone, but his belly felt empty as a kettle drum. Seeking something else to eat, Luca noticed a small cherry tree hidden amongst the weeds. He plucked a bunch of bright red cherries and popped them into his mouth. As he chewed them, he was astonished to see his nose get smaller and smaller until it was back to its original size.
Wow, so figs make your nose grow and cherries make it shrink. Aha! I think I know how to get back Papa's gifts!
Luca found an old basket someone had thrown away and filled it with figs from the tree. Then he stuffed his pockets with cherries. Next, he gathered up some dirt and smudged it on his face so that it looked like a beard and a mustache. He strutted over to the Duchess's front door and gave it a hard knock. The guard answered,
Yes, may I help you?
Thanks to Luca's fake facial hair, the guard had no idea who he was.
Good morning, good morning. I've come to see if you would like to buy some figs. They're the juiciest, sweetest figs you've ever tasted.
They're that good, huh? You know what? We work so darn hard around here, we deserve a little treat. Sure, we'll buy your figs.
Luca collected the guard's money and returned to the garden to hide. That morning, everyone in the Duchess's mansion feasted on figs. The butler, the cook, the guard, and yes, the Duchess herself. So, can you guess what happened? That's right, everyone's nose grew and grew. And the Duchess's nose grew longer than anybody else's.
Ah! Call a doctor! Call all the doctors! Someone must figure out how to heal my long, long nose!
Through the open windows of the Duchess's mansion, Luca could hear her shrieking.
Oh, I'll heal your long, long nose, all right, Duchess, and your big, big greed.
Once again, Luca knocked at the Duchess's door. Once again, the guard answered, only his nose was so long, it stuck out of the doorway long before the rest of him did.
Yes.
Well, I understand a mysterious illness has struck your household. Everyone seems to be growing big noses.
Why, yes. Can you help us?
Why, it just so happens that I can. I have just the cure for you.
The guard led Luca inside. Luca saw that every servant in the house was bumping into sofas and tables and walls, even each other. Their noses were so long, they could barely see where they were going. One by one, Luca fed them a handful of cherries. As soon as they'd swallowed the fruit, their noses shrank back to their regular size. Relieved, they all gathered round to thank him.
You're welcome. I mean, you're welcome.
Uh-oh, Luca thought. Did the servants realize who he really was? His heart began to race. Then, out of the corner of his eye, he saw the guard wink at him.
Don't you worry, little man. Your secret is safe with us.
Just then, the Duchess came running in, her giant nose bumping the walls and knocking down paintings and light sconces.
What's going on here? Who is this strange man?
Oh, this strange man, Duchess, is a genius. He's cured us of our long noses.
The Duchess's eyes darted around the room. They landed on Luca, whom she didn't recognize, thanks to his false beard and mustache.
Oh, yeah? And exactly how did you cure everyone?
Well, you see, he gave us this special fruit.
I wasn't talking to you. I was talking to this young man here.
The guard bowed his head. The cook and butler gave him a sympathetic pat on the back.
Look, my lady, I can see you are upset, but no need to yell. I come bearing a magical fruit. It has very special powers.
Oh, special powers, eh? Do you think you are the only one with special powers around here?
The Duchess scurried to her room. When she came back, she was flailing her arms, waving the horn and hat and coin purse in Luca's disguised face.
You want to hear about special powers? You should see these wonders. Look here, a horn that will bring you anything you like, and a hat that makes you disappear, and a coin purse that will give you endless amounts of money.
Luca smiled when he saw his father's gifts.
I see. But would you trade all of those magical wonders for a magical fruit?
Are you kidding? I'm not going to trade anything. I'm a Duchess, and I get what I want. Give me that fruit this instant.
The butler, cook, and guard could hardly believe their eyes. They knew the Duchess was demanding. But even now, with her nose stretching halfway across the room, she refused to give an inch. The guard couldn't help but speak up.
Duchess, forgive me if I'm speaking out of turn, but you may want to reconsider.
The other servants nodded in agreement. The Duchess's face turned so red, it was practically purple.
Me? Reconsider? Never. Now, give me that fruit!
The Duchess tried lunging at Luca, but before she could reach him, the butler seized the coin purse, the cook grabbed the hat, and the guard yanked the horn. They tossed the items into Luca's hands.
Way to go, little man. Now, run!
And he did. Luca ran as fast as his legs would take him, through the front door, past the iron gate, and out into the city. As soon as he got home, he knew exactly what he would do. He opened an old notebook, sharpened a pencil, and began to write. His oldest brother had found his path as an artist. His other brother was on his way to becoming a doctor. And now Luca would be an author, telling his stories for all the world to read and hear. Now it's your turn. What's something you hope to do once you set out into the world? Maybe there's a problem you want to solve, or something you want to learn more about, or other ways you hope to make the world a better place. Find a grown-up, maybe the one listening with you right now, and talk with them about one or two things you might want to do someday. There's no right or wrong answer, and of course, nothing is set in stone. We never know where the road may lead us, as Luca discovered in today's story. Now that you've listened to The Hat, the Horn, and the Purse, we invite you to color it. Tell your grown-ups to visit our website, wbur.org/circleround, and click on Coloring Pages. There, you'll find Sabina Hahn's wonderful black and white pictures for this story and all our stories. Print them out, then let your imagination run wild. And if you're up for it, we'd love to see what you color. Our email address is circleround@wbur.org. Special thanks to this week's actors, Tom Whaley, Jacob Yeh, Jason McCool, Jefferson Russell, Sarah Marshall, and Bobby Moynihan. You can hear Bobby as Louie Duck on the Disney XD animated series, DuckTales. Circle Round is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. If you haven't already, you can subscribe to Circle Round on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have a moment, please write us a review. It helps other people find the show. I'm Rebecca Shear. Thanks for circling round with us. All right, everybody, let's start today's episode with a joke. Ready? Okay. Why was 6 afraid of 7? Do you know? Have you heard this one before? Because 7 ate 9. Get it? 7 ate 9. So maybe it's not the funniest joke in the world, but in just a moment, we'll hear a story about a boy who loved telling jokes, and he used one of them to get out of a rather sticky situation. I'm Rebecca Shear, and welcome to Circle Round, where story time happens all the time. Today's story comes from Japan, an island nation in Asia. It's called The Rice Cakes and the Oni. What is an oni, you ask? We'll find out soon. In the meantime, some really great people came together to bring you this tale, including some actors who've been all over the movies and TV, Tamlin Tomita and Hudson Yang. So, circle around, everyone, for The Rice Cakes and the Oni. A long time ago, in a village by the sea, there lived a woman named Mayumi and her son, Haru. Everyone knew Mayumi and Haru because of the delicious rice cakes they sold at the market. Thanks to an old family recipe, Mayumi and Haru made rice cakes that were crispy, light, and perfectly round, just like a wheel. Every night, after dinner time and homework time, they would cook their rice cakes in the kitchen, with Haru telling jokes to entertain his mother.
So, Mama, why are fish so smart?
I don't know, son. Why are fish so smart?
Because they swim in schools.
Like everyone in the village, Mayumi and Haru lived in a house perched high on a mountain. It was a peaceful place, but everyone knew that in a cave at the bottom of the mountain, right by the sea, lived 3 big monsters. They were called the Oni. But they only came out at night, so few people had ever actually seen them. One evening, Haru decided he was going to cook the best batch of rice cakes ever. While his mother drifted off to sleep, Haru was wide awake in the kitchen.
Haru-chan, it's time to rest. I have a long day at the market tomorrow, and you have a long day at school.
I know, Mama. I just want to finish this batch. These rice cakes are going to be perfect.
By the time Haru finished, he was tired. But he wanted to make sure the rice cakes were perfect. So he took one from the pan and went outside to taste it. He was worried the crunch would wake his mother. But just as he was about to take a bite, Haru was overcome by exhaustion, and he fell asleep. A few minutes later, he woke with a start. He must have dropped his rice cake, for now it was on the ground, rolling down the mountain.
Mama! Mama! Our rice cake's with a special recipe! I dropped one, and it's heading toward the sea. I must go get it.
Haru's shouting jolted Mayumi out of her slumber. She called out through the window.
Haru! Come back here! Don't tangle with the oni! Who knows what those monsters will do?
But she was too late. Haru had already raced down the mountain. Now he watched helplessly as his rice cake rolled into the enormous hands of an oni. The oni took off running on his hairy legs.
Come back here, oni! I want my rice cake back!
By now, Mayumi had jumped out of bed and scurried down the mountain after her son.
Haru! Stop! Stop!
Mayumi chased after Haru, and Haru chased after the oni. They all ended up in the oni's dark cave by the sea. Mayumi grabbed Haru's hand as the oni spun around to face them, with his sharp eyes and large, pointy ears.
We oni have heard how famous you are for your light, crispy rice cakes. Now I shall see whether it is true.
He lifted the rice cake to his enormous lips. Mayumi and Haru heard a loud crunch, followed by a noisy gulp.
Mmm, delicious.
Mayumi and Haru felt a wave of relief wash over them, but then...
In fact, this rice cake is so delicious, you must make more for all of us.
Suddenly, three more oni came lumbering into the cave, and they looked hungry. Mayumi knew what she and Haru must do. Better that the oni eat their rice cakes than eat them.
All right, oni. We will make your rice cakes. But we'll need a few things. First, a pot.
One of the oni tromped to the back of the cave and returned with a big black pot.
Next, we'll need a spoon.
Another oni trudged to the back of the cave and came back with a long-handled wooden spoon.
And finally, we'll need time. Time to make enough rice cakes for all of you.
The oni pointed at the spoon in Mayumi's hand.
Well, it just so happens you're in luck. This spoon is a magic spoon. Tap it against the side of the pot, and instantly, rice will appear. Now get cooking. If we can't eat your rice cake soon, we can always eat you.
With that, the four oni shuffled to the other side of the cave, and Mayumi and Haru got ready to make the biggest, most important batch of rice cakes of their lives. Will Mayumi and Haru make enough rice cakes for the oni? And will the mother and son ever get back home again? We'll find out after a quick break.
I really like the ocean is salty and the happiest man in the world. Because I'm good. And I like the music.
Welcome back to Circle Round. I'm Rebecca Shear. Today's story is called The Rice Cakes and the Oni. When we left off, Mayumi and her son Haru were making rice cakes for the oni, big monsters who lived in a cave by the sea. Night after night, Mayumi would take a magic spoon and tap it against the pot. Rice would appear, and she and Haru would use the rice to make batch after batch of light, crispy rice cakes. The oni would devour the rice cakes, and then, come morning, they would fall fast asleep, snoring with their giant mouths wide open. One morning, while the oni were snoozing, Haru looked at his mother with tears in his eyes.
Mama, I'm so sorry. If I hadn't let that rice cake roll down the mountain, we wouldn't be in this mess. This whole thing is all my fault.
Do not worry, Haru. We will find a way to get out of here.
That night, after the Oni woke up and gobbled down another 10,000 rice cakes, Mayumi gathered up her courage.
Listen, Oni. We have fed you millions of rice cakes. Enough rice cakes to reach the sun. Now we need to go home.
Haru squeezed his mother's hand.
Yes, Oni. I am missing school, and Mama is missing the market.
Ha! You think you can leave. We will let you go when we've had our fill, and our big Oni bellies are never full.
The Oni laughed so hard Mayumi and Haru could feel the walls of the cave rumbling. Mayumi pulled her son close.
Listen, Haru. I have a plan. The sun will soon come up, and the Oni will go to sleep. Once they're snoring away, we will take the big black pot and drag it out of the cave, to the water. Then we'll get inside and use it as a boat. We'll float around the bay to the other side of the mountain, and once we climb the mountain, we'll be back home again.
Haru's eyes lit up at the thought of escaping by sea, for he knew that although the Oni lived near the water, they didn't like to get wet. They were so heavy that if they entered the sea, they'd sink like rocks.
What an amazing idea, Mama. I promise I'll never get us into another mess again.
Well, my son, we will get out of this one together.
The next morning, after the sun came up and the Oni went back to sleep, Mayumi and Haru tiptoed over to the big black pot. Mayumi put the magic spoon in her pocket, and together she and Haru dragged the pot to the shore. Then they climbed inside. Mayumi took the magic spoon and shoved it against the shore. She let out a sigh of relief as the pot began to float away. But do you remember the Oni's giant, pointy ears? Well, those giant, pointy ears can pick up the smallest of sounds, like a mosquito flapping its wings on the other side of the world. So Mayumi's sigh, quiet though it was, immediately woke all the Oni up. As Mayumi and Haru drifted on the water in the big black pot, they had no idea the Oni were beginning to stir until...
Mama! What are all these fish doing? Flapping and flopping inside our pot.
I don't know, Haru. They're flapping and flopping around outside the pot, too. The water, it's disappearing.
Mayumi's heart sank as she looked back at the shore. There they were, the Oni, all wide awake. She noticed that their cheeks and bellies were especially big and round.
Is it possible? I think they've sucked up all the water from the bay.
You see, the Oni may hate getting wet, but they sure love a good drink of water. With their puffy cheeks and bloated bellies, they began bounding toward Mayumi and Haru. That's when Mayumi had an idea.
Son, quickly, tell me a joke.
A joke? At a time like this? With all due respect, Mama, shouldn't we get out and run?
Haru, just like you do when we're making rice cakes at home, tell me a joke.
Okay. A joke.
Haru's mind was racing.
Okay, here goes. What is a whale's favorite game to play?
Mayumi smiled.
I don't know, Haru. What is a whale's favorite game to play?
Haru paused.
Swallow the leader!
Mayumi could never resist her son's jokes, and this one was no different. Even though she was frightened, she began to laugh. But she wasn't the only one. With their giant pointy ears, the Oni had heard Haru's joke too. And now they were laughing, so hard that all the water came spilling out of their mouths. It filled up the bay until the fish were no longer flapping and flopping around.
Look, Mama, the water is back.
All thanks to your joke, my son. Now let's go!
As the Oni howled with laughter on the shore, Mayumi and Haru began floating away in the big black pot. They drifted around the bay until they reached the other side of the mountain. After climbing onto the rocky shore, they hiked back up to their house.
Mama, we did it! But I have to say, after all that, I'm hungry as an Oni.
Mayumi was hungry too, but they'd been captured by the Oni just before market day, so the kitchen was bare. Frustrated, she shoved her hands in her pockets. That's when she felt it.
The spoon.
The magic spoon from the Oni, the one that made rice appear with a simple tap. Mayumi dashed over to her favorite pot.
Here we go. Tap, tap, tap!
Suddenly, grains of rice began to appear. With each tap, there was more rice.
Mama! Food! Let's eat!
All right, my son. We'll make some rice cakes.
She gave Haru a wink.
But maybe this time, we won't let anything roll down the mountain.
Mayumi and Haru enjoyed a wonderful feast. And from then on, they always had enough to eat. The magic spoon, an unintentional gift from the Oni, never let them down. Now it's your turn. Let's say you want to tell a joke that will make the Oni laugh and laugh. Maybe you already know one. Maybe you want to use your imagination and make one up. Either way, your joke can be as silly and as zany as you'd like. Find someone you'd like to have fun with and tell them your joke. Maybe they'll tell you one too. You can make the Oni laugh and laugh together. Coming up next time on Circle Round, remember the last time you saw a rainstorm? We'll hear a legend about where all that thunder and lightning comes from. And it's not from where you might think.
Lightning, I've been trying to tell you, you can't keep bolting and streaking around the village. You don't know your own strength.
I know, I'm sorry.
Dayo Okenyi and Yetide Badaki star in the Nigerian folktale Thunder and Lightning. If you had fun hearing today's story, The Rice Cakes and the Oni, you can find other versions of this tale and some beautiful illustrations by artist Sabina Hahn, including some you can color. It's all on our website. Tell your grown-ups they can find us at wbur.org/circleround. We're also keeping an album on Instagram, and we'd love to see what you color. If you'd like to share your picture, and your grown-ups use Instagram, ask them to help you post your artwork and tag it with #CircleRound. Today's story, The Rice Cakes and the Oni, was adapted by Jessica Alpert and me, Rebecca Shear. Original music and sound design is by Eric Shimalonis. Casting is by Amy Lippins, CSA, along with help from our executive producer, Jessica Alpert. Our intern is Chris Yulian. Special thanks to this week's actors, Corey Harris, Tamlin Tamita, and Hudson Yang. And grown-ups, you can see Tamlin Tamita in the new ABC show, The Good Doctor. And don't miss Hudson Yang in another ABC offering, Fresh Off the Boat. Season 4 is airing now. Circle Round is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. If you're an adult and you're on Facebook, you can find us at facebook.com/CircleRoundPodcast. You can also subscribe to Circle Round on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Rebecca Shear. Thanks for circling round with us. What's something you love to do on your own? Read a book? Draw a picture? Listen to your favorite music? When you're doing something you enjoy and you're by yourself, it can almost feel like everyone and everything else disappears, you know? Well, we're about to meet a woman who loved to weave. And she loved making this one particular weaving so very much, it disappeared. I'm Rebecca Shear, and welcome to Circle Round, where story time happens all the time. Today, our story is called The Magic Cloth. It comes to us from China. Some really great people came together to bring you this tale, including Kelly Hu and Albert Tsai. Grown-ups, you may recognize Kelly Hu from the AMC original drama series Dietland. And Albert Tsai stars on the ABC sitcom Dr. Ken. So, circle around, everyone, for The Magic Cloth. If you travel to China, you'll find many magnificent mountains. And once upon a time, right next to one of those magnificent mountains, lived a mother and her three sons. The sons looked a lot like their mother. They all had raven black hair and bright smiles with mouths full of pearly white teeth. Ma and her sons worked hard every day. While the boys went out into the forest and chopped wood, Ma sat at a large loom with threads of all different colors and wove cloth. A few times a week, they would take the wood and the cloth to town to sell at the marketplace. During one of those market visits, Ma saw something that made her heart skip a beat.
Oh, my!
Hanging from another stall was a big cloth. Someone had woven a picture of a gleaming white house surrounded by big red flowers and lush leafy trees. The bright green grass was full of cheerful animals scampering about.
My sons, look at that cloth! Have you ever seen anything so glorious? I would give anything for us to live in that gleaming white house.
Ma's oldest and most practical son, Jin, laughed.
Dear mother, we can hardly afford to live in our own home, let alone that fancy place.
The middle son, Kang, who was also rather practical, agreed.
Besides, that house isn't even real. It's just a picture somebody wove into a cloth.
But unlike his older brothers, Ma's youngest son, Ling, was more of a dreamer. So he didn't laugh at his mother.
Ma, what if you bought this cloth and then wove a copy of it? You could create your own cloth on your own loom. You wouldn't actually live in that gleaming white house, but isn't recreating it with your own hands the next best thing?
That's a fine idea, Ling. I think I have just enough coins in my purse to buy it.
No, Mother. Allow me.
So Ling paid for the cloth, and the family returned home. Ma pinned her new cloth to the wall and walked over to her loom. She began to weave her many-colored threads, carefully and lovingly looping them over and under, over and under. Day after day, night after night, Ma sat at her loom. She barely took a break. Her back ached, but she kept on weaving. Her eyes grew strained, but she kept on weaving.
I have to make my picture look just like the picture on the cloth I bought. The house, the flowers, the trees, the grass, the animals, every last detail.
Sometimes Ma would grow frustrated with her work. She'd shed a few tears, and when the tears hit the cloth, it was like rain was falling. The flowers seemed to grow taller, and the green trees and grass looked even more lush. When Ma was pleased with her work, she would smile. And when she smiled, it was like the sun was coming out. The sky looked bluer, the animals seemed happier, and Ma could have sworn the white house was glowing. After sitting at her loom for 1 year, Ma hadn't sold a single weaving at the market. Her two practical older sons, Jin and Kang, decided they had had enough.
Can you believe it? 4 seasons have passed, and Ma keeps weaving that cloth.
I know.
Which means we have to work even harder when we come home from school, and chop even more wood to sell at the market.
It isn't fair.
But the youngest son, Ling, defended Ma.
Brothers, can't you see how much this cloth means to our mother? I know, we have to work even harder to sell our wood. So listen, I will stay up late at night and chop wood so that we have plenty to sell at the market.
And he did. 4 more seasons passed, another whole year. And finally, one bright morning, Ma looked up from her loom.
My sons, come, quick! My cloth, it's finished.
It's done?
Finally!
Oh, how wonderful! Let's take it outside and look at it in the sunlight.
Ma and her sons ran to the front yard for a better look. Ling, the youngest, could hardly believe his eyes.
The house, Mother, it's so white, it glows. The flowers are red as fire. The trees look ready for climbing. And the animals, you'd think they're about to start jumping around on the green, green grass. What do you think, brothers?
Jin and Kang glanced at their mother's creation.
Well, I guess it's nice, Ma.
Considering how many hours you spent sitting at that loom of yours.
Oh, Ma, those hours were totally worth it. Your picture is a million times more beautiful than that cloth you purchased at the market. No, a trillion times.
Thank you, my children. And thank you for letting me work so hard on my creation. You must know it meant the world to me to be able to...
But before Ma could finish her sentence, Do you know what happened? A huge gust of wind whooshed past the house and snatched the cloth right out of Ma's hands. Ma and her sons watched as the cloth floated toward the sky. Then the wind switched directions and blew to the east, right toward the mountain next to their house. Before the family knew it, the cloth had rippled and danced over the mountaintop and disappeared.
I can't believe this! That cloth was everything to me. I gave it my entire soul. What will I do now?
Ma began to cry. As her sobs grew, she began to look older. Her skin became more wrinkled, her back more hunched. Her rosy cheeks turned white, and her raven black hair turned a silvery gray. She suddenly felt weak.
My children, I fear that without my cloth, I may not make it past the season.
Suddenly, Ma stumbled. Her sons rushed to hold her up. The youngest son, Ling, took her hand, now rough and pale.
Mother, now that your cloth has danced its way past the mountain and far, far away, what will we do?
Ma took a deep breath and looked Ling straight in the eye.
It's simple, my son. We will get it back.
Do you think Ma and her sons will find the beautiful cloth? And will the cloth make her well again? We'll find out after a quick break.
Support for the Circle Round podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/circle round. That's Indeed.com/circle round. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back to Circle Round. I'm Rebecca Shear. Today, our story is called The Magic Cloth. When we left off, Ma was showing her three sons the beautiful cloth she'd spent 2 years weaving. Then, with a burst of wind, the cloth sailed away to the east, far over the mountain. Ma was so distraught she grew ill, her black hair turning gray and her skin growing wrinkled and pale. But she knew what they had to do. Ma turned to her oldest son, Jin, the most practical of the bunch.
Jin, you were the first child I brought into this world. And now I will ask, will you be the one to bring me back my cloth? I am far too weak to embark on such a journey.
Jin nodded. He packed a few things and left at once, heading east toward the mountain.
I still can't figure out why that cloth means so much to my mother. It's just a piece of weaving. But as her oldest son, I will help her find it.
After days of walking and climbing, Jin reached the top of the mountain. He was surprised to see a familiar shape among the boulders and rocks.
Is that a horse?
It was. But not just any horse. This one was made of stone. To Jin's surprise, it began to speak.
Hello, my friend. I know that you are looking for a cloth. A most beautiful cloth. You are close to your goal. I can take you there.
You can? Then take me there at once. Between you and me, I'm tired of searching for this silly thing.
Very well. Here is what you must do. Take 2 teeth from your mouth and put them into mine. Then I will transform into a living horse. I will take you across a freezing ocean and through a blazing fire. And if you show no sign of fear, you will get your mother's cloth.
All the color drained from Jin's face. Freezing oceans, blazing fires. The very thought of it made him tremble, not to mention pulling out his pearly white teeth. The horse noticed Jin's fright.
Now, there is an alternative. You may take this bag of gold and walk away without the cloth.
With a burst of smoke, a glittering bag of gold appeared at the horse's feet. Jin's thoughts turned to all he could buy with gold like that.
I could get the most delicious food and the fanciest clothing? Why, I'd never have to chop wood to sell at the market again! Getting a bag of gold now is far more practical than embarking on some dangerous journey to get my mother's cloth back.
So Jin picked up the bag, bid the horse farewell, and climbed down the other side of the mountain, not toward his mother and brothers, but to the city, where he could spend his brand new fortune. Meanwhile, back home, Ma was getting sicker and sicker as she longed for her cloth. She summoned her middle son, Kang, and her youngest son, Ling, to her bedside.
My sons, it's been days and days, and your older brother, Jin, has yet to return. I fear he will never come back with what I asked for.
Slowly, she turned to Kang, who was almost as practical as Jin was.
Kang, you were the second child I brought into this world. And now I ask, will you be the one to bring me back my cloth?
Kang nodded, and like his older brother, he too packed his things and began to walk east up to the mountain.
If my older brother couldn't find the cloth, I'm not sure how I will.
But Kang figured he would see what he could do. Kang walked and climbed for days, and as with his older brother, when he reached the top of the mountain, he too met the stone horse, who told him the same thing. Well, when Kang heard about the teeth, the ocean, and the fire, he was just as terrified as his older brother was. So he too chose to take the big bag of gold and head to the city. Back at the house, Ma was so weak with grief she could barely speak. Her youngest son, Ling, was sitting by her bedside, feeding her what little food she would eat and trying to make her comfortable.
Ling, it's clear to me that neither of your brothers is going to return. I thank you for staying here and taking care of me. But without my cloth, I don't know how much longer I can live. So I ask, will you be the one to bring my creation back to me?
Ling may have been a dreamer, but he understood the reality of the situation.
I want to get that cloth back just as much as you do, Ma. So, of course, I will get it back.
Just like his two older brothers, Ling packed up his belongings and walked east, up to the mountain. And just like his older brothers, at the top he met the same stone horse, who made the same offer.
I can take you to your mother's cloth, if you give me two of the teeth from your mouth. Then we'll ride through a freezing ocean and a blazing fire. Or you can take this bag of gold and walk away.
Without hesitating, Ling yanked two pearly white teeth from his mouth. Amazingly, he didn't feel a thing.
Here you go, horse. Two of my teeth.
And can you guess what happened when Ling put his teeth into the horse's mouth? The stone horse turned into a real horse, brown as a chestnut. Ling jumped onto the horse's back.
Let's go!
First, they crossed the freezing ocean. As the icy waves splashed Ling's face, he shivered, but he showed no fear. Next, Ling and the horse passed through the blazing fire. He felt the heat of the flames, but again, he showed no fear. At last, Ling and the horse reached a quiet, cool meadow. When Ling climbed off the horse's back, his jaw dropped in wonder.
Fairies!
Ling watched as dozens of tiny fairies flitted and fluttered around a willow tree. They were working on a loom and weaving a cloth. The cloth wasn't quite finished, but Ling would recognize its pattern anywhere.
Those red flowers, Those green trees, that gleaming white house, they're weaving my mother's picture.
And they were weaving it using a rather familiar model.
Moss cloth.
Indeed, right next to the fairy's unfinished cloth, hanging from the willow tree, was his mother's finished cloth, every bit as beautiful as the day it disappeared over the mountain. Ling stepped forward and waved.
Hello? Fairies! I'm sorry to interrupt your weaving, but I have to ask, what are you doing with my mother's cloth?
The queen of the fairies zipped over to Ling and perched on his thumb.
Well, you see, when your mother brought her cloth outside to show it to you and your brothers, we were overwhelmed by its beauty. The details were so vivid, so vibrant. So we asked the wind to whisk the cloth away to our meadow so we could make a copy. We're almost done. Would you mind waiting while we finish up?
My mother has been sick with grief since her cloth disappeared, but she would be flattered to know you love her creation so much. Yes, of course, Queen Fairy. I will wait.
Weary from his adventures, Ling drifted off to sleep. While he was snoozing, the fairies finished weaving their cloth. Then, quiet as could be, they took Ma's cloth and placed it on their loom. Using every color of the rainbow, they wove their own images, their faces and bodies and wings, right onto Ma's cloth, among the bright red flowers and lush green trees. When they had finished, they rolled up Ma's cloth, gently awakened Ling, and handed it to the grateful young man.
Thank you, fairies. I will bring this home to Mother. I just hope I make it in time.
Ling got back on the horse and traveled through the blazing fire and freezing ocean. Once they reached the mountain, the horse returned Ling's pearly white teeth and turned back into stone. Ling scurried down the mountainside to his mother. When Ma spotted her youngest son through her bedroom window and saw that he was carrying her beautiful cloth rolled up in his hands, do you know what happened? Her silvery gray hair turned raven black again, and the color returned to her cheeks. Her back straightened, and her skin once more became smooth. Suddenly full of energy, Ma sprinted outside to her son, who told her all about the stone horse and the fairies. Together, Ma and Ling unrolled the cloth. They were surprised to see the images the fairies had added to the picture. The fairy faces, wings, and bodies. Ma and Ling were even more surprised when, suddenly, the woven fairies on the cloth came to life.
Oh my goodness! You're real!
We are, and so honored to meet you, Ma. Your beautiful cloth has brought us such joy.
I'm glad to hear it. I devoted my heart and soul to this creation for 2 whole years.
We know. And for that dedication and devotion, we'd like to thank you with this.
The queen fairy waved her arms, and next thing Ma and Ling knew, everything on the cloth, the animals, the flowers, the trees, and, of course, the gleaming white house, it all came to life. All the things Ma had spent hours and hours, days and days, years and years weaving, became real. And that's how Ma spent the rest of her happy days, living in her dream home with her dreamer son beside the mountain. Now it's your turn. Can you remember the last time you wished something could become real? A character from a book, maybe, or something from one of your dreams? Think about it, and then draw a picture. Share that picture with a grown-up in your life. And if you're up for it, share it with us. Have your grown-up take a photo of your creation and email it to circleround@wbur.org. And while you're in the artsy spirit, you can color a really fun black and white illustration from today's story. It's by artist Sabina Hahn, and it's on our website. Tell your grown-ups they can find us at wbur.org/circleround. Today's folktale, The Magic Cloth, was adapted by Virginia Marshall, Jessica Alpert, and me, Rebecca Shear. Original music and sound design is by Eric Shimalonis. Casting is by Amy Lippins, CSA, along with help from our executive producer, Jessica Alpert. Special thanks to our actors, Jacob Yeh, Ray Sheen, Sarah Storm, J. Ben Early, Kelly Hu, and Albert Tsai. Grown-ups, you can see Kelly Hu on the AMC original drama series, Dietland. And Albert Tsai stars on the ABC sitcom, Dr. Ken. Circle Round is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Rebecca Shear. Thanks for circling around with us. Have you ever been teased about something? We've all been there, and we all know that being made fun of is no fun at all. In today's story, we'll meet a prince who learned that lesson the hard way, thanks to the wind, some fairies, and a very humble barber. I'm Rebecca Shear, and welcome to Circle Round, where story time happens all the time. Today, our story is called The Barber's Secret. You can find versions of this folktale in many countries, from India to Korea to Ireland. Some really great people came together to bring you this tale, including Noah Schnapp, a terrific young actor some of you grown-ups may have seen on the Netflix series Stranger Things. So, circle around, everyone, for The Barber's Secret. Once upon a time, there lived a king and queen. The king and queen were deeply unhappy because they wanted a child, but were unable to have one.
Oh, my queen, a bouncing baby would be such a wonderful thing, and to have an heir to our throne, whatever will we do?
I know not, my king. Perhaps we can ask the fairies in the forest. Maybe they'll know the answer.
The king and queen left the palace and wandered deep, deep into the woods. They walked past tall, leafy trees and patches of wildflowers, past bushy-tailed squirrels and gracefully grazing deer. At last, they reached the cave of the three fairies, the beautiful fairy, the intelligent fairy, and the wise fairy. The king and queen got down on their knees and looked at the fairies with tears in their eyes.
Magical fairies. The king and I have been longing for a child of our own, but we cannot make it so.
Good fairies, please, tell us. Can you use your magic powers to help a desperate couple in need?
The fairies talked amongst themselves for a moment. Then the beautiful fairy began to speak.
Your royal highnesses, we will give you a child, a son. We will also give you three wishes. My wish is that your son is the most handsome in the land.
The king and queen smiled. A son, and the most good-looking at that. Next up was the intelligent fairy.
My wish is that your son is the smartest of anyone in the kingdom.
The king and queen could hardly contain their delight. Not only would their son be beautiful, he would be bright, too. Finally, the wise fairy took her turn. She flapped her silvery wings and fluttered up to the king and queen, looking them straight in the eye.
And my wish?
The fairy paused. The king and queen held their breath, excited for her to finish.
My wish is that your son has the ears of a donkey.
The king and queen's jaws dropped. Donkey ears? Why would the wise fairy wish something so strange on their son? But before they could ask any questions, there was a burst of light and all three fairies disappeared. The king and queen were puzzled, but they were so happy to have a child on the way that they decided not to give the wise fairy's wish another thought. Soon thereafter, the prince was born, and just as the beautiful fairy and the intelligent fairy wished, he was a very handsome and smart little baby. One day, when the prince was a toddler, he was playing chess with the king. Looking at the boy, the king noticed something odd. Not wanting to scare his son, he muttered under his breath,
"Are those donkey ears?"
Indeed, two small donkey ears had begun to sprout on either side of the prince's beautiful head. The boy was so young, he didn't understand what was going on, so he wasn't bothered in the least. But the king shuddered at the thought of showing the kingdom that his handsome, intelligent son had the ears of a donkey. So he summoned everyone who worked at the palace, the butlers, the bakers, the gardeners, the tailors, and gathered them in the great hall.
"Good sirs and ladies, as the king, today I issue the following decree. From henceforth, the prince must always wear this hat."
The king's hand shot up into the air. In it, he clutched a red velvet cap, sewn with extra space around the ears.
"This hat must never, ever come off. Ever. The prince must wear it, day and night, night and day. Do you understand?"
The palace workers nodded, and the king dismissed them to their regular duties. So, thanks to the king's decree, the handsome, intelligent prince began wearing the red velvet cap. And as he grew from a toddler into a boy, he became even more handsome and intelligent. He was constantly praised for his beautiful appearance and his razor-sharp mind, and he grew rather accustomed to it. As a result, the prince became a vain young man, selfish and critical. Soon, he was making fun of everyone around him.
"Hey, you! Your jacket is torn. Don't you have time to pick up a needle and thread? And you, that look on your face! Has anyone ever told you you look like a turtle popping out of its shell?"
And so on and so forth. No one was good enough for the prince, it seemed. In his mind, he was the only one without faults or flaws. Now, remember, the prince did not know about his donkey ears. With each passing year, he wore his red velvet cap, and he never asked why. Then, one day, the king decided it was time for his son's first haircut.
"Someone find me the finest barber in the land. A barber fit for a prince."
The palace workers tracked down a very gifted barber and brought him to the palace. The barber carried all of his tools, his brushes, his combs, his razors, his scissors, in a little brown suitcase. When the prince saw the barber, he noticed the little brown case was scratched and scuffed.
"You're going to cut my hair using tools from that case? Why, it's all scratched and scuffed! Definitely not fit for a prince as handsome and intelligent as I."
The barber shrugged.
"I am but a poor barber, Your Majesty. I cannot afford to buy a new case. And besides, this one was given to me by my father. He was a barber, too. It makes me happy to think of him using it long, long ago."
The prince rolled his eyes and sat down in front of the barber. The barber draped a cape around the prince's shoulders. He removed the prince's red velvet cap. He began to comb and clip the prince's long hair. Then he stopped with a jolt, because underneath the boy's velvety locks, he saw two donkey ears.
Are those?"
The king quickly rushed forward.
"Hush, man. Just cut my son's hair."
"But those look like... they look like..."
"I said, hush."
Remember, the prince had been wearing his red velvet cap since he was a tiny tot. He had no idea what was hidden beneath. So naturally, he was confused.
"Papa, what is this man talking about?"
The king sighed.
"It has long been a secret, my son. But you have the ears of a donkey."
The prince's hands sprang to his head.
"I do?"
"Yes, my dear boy. You are the most handsome and intelligent man in the land. But you have donkey ears."
The prince grabbed his red velvet cap from the barber and tugged it back over his head.
But Papa, if I'm to remain the most handsome and intelligent young man in the land, no one must know my secret."
The king swerved his head toward the barber. He clenched his jaw. His eyes glowed as if on fire.
"Now you listen, man, and listen good. If you tell anyone about what you've seen here today, if you tell anyone about my son's donkey ears, the prince's donkey ears, I will banish you and your family from this kingdom. Will you keep this secret?"
I will, Your Majesty. I will keep this secret.
Quickly, the barber put his tools back in the little brown suitcase. As he hurried out of the palace, the king's words echoed in his mind.
If you tell anyone about what you've seen here today, I will banish you and your family from this kingdom.
The barber had a wife and three children. They had nowhere to go if they were forced to leave the kingdom. And yet, with a secret so big, how in the world would he keep it to himself? We'll find out what the barber decides to do after a quick break.
Do you remember the story, The Barber's Secret?
Yeah. I love the king.
Why do you love the king?
Because I love that so much.
Now, can you tell me about the king's son, the prince?
Yeah, because he has donkey ears.
He has donkey ears.
Yeah. If you tell anyone about my friend's donkey ears, I will banish you and your family from this kingdom.
That's what the king says, yeah.
I'm Rebecca Shear. Welcome back to Circle Round. Today's story is called The Barber's Secret. When we left off, the barber had sworn to keep the king's secret, that his son, the prince, had the ears of a donkey. The king told the barber that if he shared the secret with anyone, the barber and his family would have to leave the kingdom. For the next month, the barber didn't tell a soul. Not his wife, not his three children, not any of the men and women whose hair he cut with the tools from his little brown suitcase. But eventually, the barber could no longer bear it. He had to tell someone his secret. He walked into the forest, the same forest the king and queen had entered before the prince was born. He strolled past the same tall, leafy trees and patches of wildflowers, past the children of those bushy-tailed squirrels and gracefully grazing deer. The barber stopped at a clearing in front of a cave. Little did he know, it was the cave of the three magic fairies. Stepping into the darkness, the barber touched the cool stone walls, took a deep breath, and hollered with all his might.
The prince has donkey ears! The prince has donkey ears!
Immediately, the barber felt better. He was so relieved to tell his secret to someone or something that he skipped all the way home, as if a weight had lifted from his shoulders. But the barber departed so quickly that he didn't hear what happened next. His words began to bounce around the cave, the echo growing louder and louder as it leapt among the cool stone walls.
The prince has donkey ears! The prince has donkey ears!
The echo got so powerful that it jumped right out of the cave. It flew through the forest and all through the kingdom. The echo bounced off houses and schools, off cafes and shops, and with every bounce, people stopped what they were doing to listen. As more and more people heard the echo, they began to wonder, was it true? Did their vain and conceited prince really have donkey ears? Is that why he always wore that red velvet cap? Soon, it was the prince who was being criticized. After all those years making fun of other people, now he was the butt of everyone's jokes. As he passed through the kingdom, he would hear,
"Hey, prince, my field needs planting. Can you pull my plow?"
"Hey, prince, I have some extra oats and hay in the barn. Want some dinner?"
"Hey, prince! Yaw! Yaw!"
After a few months of this treatment, the prince decided enough was enough. He gathered the people of the kingdom outside the palace. Standing on the steps of the castle, he looked out at the throngs of men, women, and children. He reached his hands up, and with one quick yank, he pulled off his red velvet cap. The donkey ears immediately sprang up from either side of his handsome head. The crowd gasped.
"My people, it's true. I, your prince,
have donkey ears.
The crowd began to murmur.
I spent so long believing I was the most perfect young man in the kingdom. I spent years believing you weren't good enough. I criticized you. I made fun of you for every little flaw, for every little fault, when all this time...
The prince pointed to his ears.
I've been hiding my own. My people, my good, good people. I don't know if you can ever forgive me, but I offer you all of my deepest, most sincere apologies.
The prince hung his head, his donkey ears flopping down over his beautiful face.
I see now that being made fun of is no fun at all.
And with that, he began to cry. But as soon as the first tear streamed down his cheek and plopped onto the ground, who should appear but the wise fairy, the one who wished the donkey ears on the prince in the first place?
Oh, little prince, now you see. If it weren't for those ears, you would have continued down the same road you were on, growing from a vain and critical boy into a vain and critical man. You have learned your lesson, my prince. You need donkey ears no more.
There was a burst of light, and the wise fairy disappeared, as did the prince's donkey ears. From then on, the prince was a good and compassionate man. Instead of dishing out judgment and disapproval, he offered encouragement and assistance. He even reached out to the barber and offered to buy a new case for his tools, but the barber graciously declined. He really enjoyed using the same little brown suitcase that his father had all those years ago. The prince was a new man, unrecognizable from the know-it-all youth he'd once been. And whenever he heard someone criticizing others and making fun, he always would say the same thing.
Be careful, my friend. You never know when you will get donkey ears.
The prince in today's story did a lot of teasing before he realized he was hurting people's feelings. After that, he showed more kindness. What are some things you can do to show kindness? Think of at least three things and talk about them with a grown-up. Then put them into action and spread more care and generosity out in the world. We have a new story every week on Circle Round. We don't want you to miss any. So be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also visit our website, wbur.org/circleround. Today's story, The Barber's Secret, was adapted by Jessica Alpert and me, Rebecca Shear. Original music and sound design is by Eric Shimalonis. Casting is by Amy Lippins, CSA, along with help from our executive producer, Jessica Alpert. Circle Round's illustrator is Sabina Hahn. Our intern is Chris Yulian. Special thanks to this week's actors, Craig Wallace, Kimberly Schraff, Alexandra Templer, Anya Whelan-Smith, Katasha Acosta, Tom Story, Ryan Haddad, Dolores King-Williams, and Noah Schnapp. You can catch Noah Schnapp in Stranger Things on Netflix. Circle Round is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Rebecca Shear. Thanks for circling round with us.